Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Transperfect Lifestyle Talks. I'm your host, Mark Wade. I'm the practice leader here at Transperfect Lifestyle Talks. And today I'm joined by Evanova's Indira Jane Figueroa. She's product director for ECOA at Evanova. Indira, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get into it. You and I talked before about this, and we talked about web-based backups. And it is a very hot topic because, as you all know, because you and I, full disclosure, you and I work in the ECOA consortium. This has come up before, and there are two schools of thought. Some people believe that it's kind of mission critical, and some people believe that it's unnecessary. So I thought this would be a good conversation to have with you because your background is more technology. First and foremost, would you outline it for me? Would you tell me why it's useful and tell me where we're going to use it, please?
Sure, absolutely. ECOA or ECOA is normally captured on an app on a phone. And a lot of what studies want to ensure they have is to reduce the amount of missing data that a study collects. So ideally, this is done through offline support or in the event that like a phone breaks, having some sort of mitigation or alternative to be able to collect this data. This is where these web backup solutions appear, the idea being that your app fails for some reason, or your phone breaks, or you lose it, you have an alternative method to be able to collect that data and reduce your data loss and have some sort of mitigation in place. Now, having said that, a lot of this may have been something that was probably useful before a world of a lot of internet connection. But I think in a world now today where phones are becoming more ubiquitous, app failure is quite low, and sort of replacement of phones is also pretty quick. Having web-based solutions in terms of just a backup are quite expensive.
That brings me to my little hobby horse is WAP versus app, right? So in my world, in my limited world, I sort of think around WAP being so powerful that the backup is dynamic. The data is captured dynamically in the cloud. My thinking is that If we did this over WAP, we would have things captured in the cloud immediately. There wouldn't be this idea that a phone could fail or an app could fail. Where do you land on that, just as a technical person?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of advantages to web applications. So for example, things like ease of development, sort of broad range, accessibility, a lot of these things are really, really powerful in web applications. I think also they're very useful for simple information services, so things that don't require like a really rich user interface. This is where like WAPs are really great. For a mobile app, however, you get a more integrated solution. You get to use more of the native devices functionality, things like notifications, things like device integrations, API connections. These are all a lot more robust with a native application development.
That does make a lot of sense. By the way, you published a paper on this, so I'd like to talk about that too. But we talked about the different real estates. With WAP, you know, HTML5, the real estate it's structured. It's going to render on any device the same way. With an app, it's not as am I right in saying that it's not as ubiquitous as you would say? It's not as universal.
Yeah, so there's some truth to that. In reference to our paper, essentially what I think what we would like to offer is everyone to have an opportunity to collect this data regardless of what technology you have access to. So what that means is if you don't have a phone and you only have access to a computer, or if you have a phone but it's not your phone but you would like to access it through maybe a web mobile or a web browser of some sort, this is where that like comparison point becomes really useful. So I think in the ECOA space for a long time, it was really important to ensure that the presentation of the questionnaires matched as closely as possible to the paper presentations. This kind of ensured that standardization and that integrity. But what we're seeing now is that with more responsive screens, sort of integrations of lots of technology, and wanting to provide some sort of preferences or options to patients, it's important to understand how the technology would potentially bias a patient. And that is exactly what we studied. We looked at applications, so native applications, in comparison to a web version of an ECOA system. And essentially in the web version, this utilized the entire real estate. So whether you had it at desktop, whether you opened it on a small mobile browser, all the screens were responsive and tested and really identified was that it didn't matter. It didn't matter if you were looking at the app or on a desktop, or if you were looking at the app on and then a mobile browser, the data collected was completely equivalent.
Right. So there was the old adage of like, I'm introducing bias by the different real estate, was just that argument is moot.
That's fair enough. Correct. Yep.
So let me just switch gears slightly and let's talk about the speed of development, because I'm old enough to remember when we used to use Palm Pilots and compact handheld devices, and we'd have to program them with the instruments on those devices, and it was incredible heavy lifting. But we've moved on now, haven't we? Massively. The second kind of generation was we would develop first on iOS and then we develop on Android, because in the United States, we're very iOS centric and the rest of the world are very Droid. So we can do it both parallel. Can you talk to that? Like how we can do it now parallel?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's been a lot of advancements with application development. And there's actually a lot of technologies now that let you share the code base so that you're no longer restricted to a particular presentation. So now there's technologies, for example, like React Native or certain other programming languages that sort of allow you to use both an app or a web interface, but have that code share base in the back. So there's been a lot of advancement in the speed of development where you no longer have to develop two separate systems.
You know, as a non-technical person, you were talking about the stacks. Can you unpack that for us idiots? What do you mean by like the technology stack, and how can that help us? And by the way, would you talk to as well the skills that we need to employ to develop these things?
So that's like a big question. So there's a lot of variety of technology stacks or tech stacks. So like you have databases where you collect a lot of data. You have sort of stacks where you do a lot of front end components. And you have sort of stacks that go into different operating systems. So there's a myriad of technology stacks. And essentially what you want to do is think of them as sort of components to be able to build your system. All of them sort of interlink together in order to have a completed system, right? So you need something in the back that holds your data. You need something in the front that interacts with your data. And you need something that sort of navigates someone through all of this data. And that's essentially what every provider will look at. They will decide their software stack or their tech stack and integrate all of these systems together.
So the skill sets then that you're looking for, in the old days, you would get like C++ programmer. What's the modern day skill that you're looking for now?
That's also a kind of a loaded question, I think, and quite difficult to answer, but I'll give it a shot. So there's different parts of a developer that really kind of help. You have some developers that are great at backend development. So this means a lot of your logic components in the back, a lot of the pieces that are mapping to your database, sort of the engine in the back. Then you have your front end developers. A lot of these developers work with user interface pieces, a lot of like front end validation logic on just how you enter some of this data. And you've probably heard of sort of app developers versus web developers versus back end developers. Usually you want a combination of all of these developers. However, now that we've had, like I mentioned before, we have new technologies that share some of this code base in the back, the app and web developers have sort of conjoined into being able to do both sort of in one place. So skills that I would say are probably really great be like Python skills, sort of more like data mining skills, SQL pieces, React Native is always going to be great. Those are probably more of your traditional tech stacks that you'll look for.
And are these tech stacks, easy for me to say, are they reusable assets? Can you reuse them for every study?
So that really depends on how you end up creating your pieces. A lot of them allow for configurability. So you'll actually create sort of a system that allows for lots of options to be configured. And those are reusable across studies. So you can switch parts of them for every study.
Right. I'd love to talk, if I may, I'm going to change slightly because this is kind of a hobby horse for me, is emulators. I know you and I talked about emulators, and I've talked to everyone about emulators. I think they are from the translation point of view, it's so useful that we can translate within the app. I mean, if we had an emulator, you could translate within the app itself. So you can see real time how it would render on a screen. That'd be pretty wonderful. Where do you land on emulators? A lot of people, by the way, a lot of ECUA providers, it's very expensive to develop those things. So a lot of them don't have it. But where do you land on emulators?
So emulators are great. They're really good for testing and automation, really great at speeding up and testing your ideas of developments. I don't think they're great necessarily for consumer use. A lot of it because they don't have all of the features there. So emulators essentially work by creating one code and then putting it onto a different hardware and that separate hardware and giving that other hardware sort of instructions on how to read this code here. So they can be kind of slow sometimes when you're trying to put them on lots of different operating systems that you want on a larger, like broad reach. So they're great for when you're just trying to test stuff and get things kind of quick. But when you're trying to look for things that are like related to notifications or API connections or having rich user experiences, they're really not that helpful at that point. So in like the ECOA world, where notifications are really like your only method of having patients remember to complete their questionnaires in a timely manner, you'd lose out on that with an emulator.
But would you gain, though, on the other side of that coin, would you gain having an emulator that you could dynamically see what your instrument is going to look like rendered?
That's correct. So I think
from our point of view, that, I mean, to be honest, I'm blue in the face talking about this, but if one had an emulator that could have an English source and then a target language real time, you change one character here and it changes there real time. To us, that's useful. But I think your point is well taken. It doesn't really help you with the notifications and stuff like that. I mean, I get it.
Yeah, exactly. So they have their place, exactly to your point. Translations and testing is probably the best places to leverage emulators.
The last part of this puzzle really is, and it's a huge part, is reporting. Right. So you talked about the different stack technologies and the different skills that are necessary. You said the back end. It's not as often overlooked, but it can be overlooked. And it's quite heavy lifting because that's going to give us our data and we need to chop and change it. Where do you land on reporting? Because full disclosure, I find your stats is fascinating. Fascinating. Brilliant, but fascinating.
Well, thank you. Yes, so to your point, reports are always thought as an afterthought, but they're actually pretty integral to the maintenance of your study. This is essentially how you are presenting the data you collected to a user, being like a doctor at the clinic or a nurse at the clinic, to your, you know, CRAs who are trying to understand how a study is going, to your sponsors who want kind of an understanding of this data and ensuring that this data is kind of coming clean as you have it. So reports are great in a sense of how they can display a lot of this information, but a lot of thought has to go into how you want your reports and your data to look into. One of the pieces around reporting is calculations. So we'll see a lot of these questionnaires come with calculations, and they can vary in terms of what the calculations are. They could be something that's quite simple, like an average or a sum, or they can be quite complex, right? Where it's like, okay, take an average over the past 7 days, compare it to this threshold average. If it varies larger than some sort of baseline, then they might be like great for including them in the study or not. And so you add a lot of complexity to this. So when I think about reporting and this kind of functionality, what I actually think of is Excel. And I feel like I'm making some enemies by saying Excel is this great.
No, this is a safe space.
But that's exactly how I feel. I mean, Excel is a very powerful tool. It's very old school, but it's designed specifically to be able to be very flexible. The operators specifically in Excel is what I think most reporting tools need. You know, they need things like sum functions and average functions and compare to functions and match functions. And that's essentially what I think most of reporting should become. It should become this ability for you to be able to configure whatever you're looking for in your data and display it how you need it to be displayed.
Interesting. I mean, I've got to be honest, you make an awful lot of sense, but I never thought that I would hear like, when I think of like database, I'm thinking of something much more, you know, advanced, like SQL database, Oracle database, or something like that. But you're talking about like simple Excel reporting. And that's very interesting. Very interesting. I'm conscious of the time because I always like to end this with one kind of question. And if you had a magic wand or a crystal ball and you were looking into the future, what do you see? And it could be anything in terms of deployment, speed, whatever it could be. What do you see as the future of COA, ECOA?
Yeah, I think it's actually very much related to reporting. I actually see AI becoming our new reporting tools. You know, once you give AI access to your database, you can essentially query it for anything. And you don't need to create operators, right? You can say, show me a list of patients that have met my threshold, my compliance threshold, and have met my symptom threshold for this value, and display it to me in a chart. And I mean, there's a lot of AI technologies that can start working on some of these pieces there. So reporting can no longer be needed, right? You just give an AI overlay over your database and have sites query it however they would find useful in the study at the time.
Fascinating. Indira, thank you so much. Today, I was joined by Indira Jane Figueroa. She is product director at Evanova. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe to our podcast, Transperfect Lifestyle Talks, on every podcast streaming. And if you want to be on the podcast, you want to come on, please drop me a line, mwade@transperfect.com. Until then, thanks a lot. Indira, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.